you want to skip ahead to something really, which is a topic that I mentioned before, but it is relevant very much halacha l'maaseh this year. So I wanted to make sure that that's included, so I'm going to put that at the beginning of this year. Shavuos will occur on Friday and Shabbos this year. So just as the first days of Pesach included an Erev Tavshilin, because the Yom was Thursday, Friday and Shabbos, Shavuos will also include an Erev Tavshilin because it's Friday and Shabbos. Yom Tovim, which include Erev Tavshilin, are very special halachas. And too often, people imagine that the halachas of the Erev Tavshilin begin and end with the making of the Erev Tavshilin. Once they made the Erev Tavshilin, everything is settled. But that's not the case. And it's not the case for the following reason. The Gemara states, Psochen Dach Mem Vavamid Beis, what would happen if Oifim Yontif Lechol? If a person cooked, baked on Yontif, for the sake of after Yontif use, what's the halacha? So, according to Rabbah, there's no Malkus in that case, because of a principle that we call Hovel. Hovel means that when the Torah allowed things to be done for Yontif use, it's not only what I definitely will use on Yontif, not only what I probably will use on Yontif, not only what there's a good chance I'll use on Yontif, but even something which is the very remote chance that I might use on Yontif is also Tzorcha Yontif. And if I cook food in the afternoon on Yontif, after the Yontif meal, nevertheless, if some stranger should happen to knock on the door and need a meal for Yontif, he just happens to be walking through, he's on the way from the Bronx to Brooklyn, and he walks through Key Garden Hills on Yontif, so I'll be able to provide him a meal. Could happen. What's the likelihood it's going to happen? Pretty small. But it could happen. So that's also considered Tzorcha Yontif. Rav Chisda said that a person will get Malkus, because the violated L'sasa Malach on Yontif. Since it was not for the purpose of Yontif, it did not fall under the heading of Ochel Nefesh, Asher Ach Hashem Ye'osel Ochel Nefesh, and therefore he violated the Yisid Reis on Malach on Yontif. So the Gemara now goes to the issue of Erev Tavshilin, how Erev Tavshilin reflects on these principles. So according to Rabbah, that we have the principle of Hovel, so that we understand. Similarly, if I cook on Erev Shabbos, and it could wind up being used on Friday, because someone might knock on the door and I would feed them. So that's enough license with the Raisa to do it. And the Erev Tavshilin gives me a rabbinical authority to do so. But if I don't hold for the principle of Hoyle, then how does the Erev Tavshilin work? A rabbinic device, the Erev Tavshilin, cannot change the Halacha ben Torah. So what happened here? So Gemara answers,
what's the caption?
How does the Erev Tavshilin help? I'm cooking for Yontif for a day tomorrow. So why is it Mutta Menatar? It's a violation of an Issa Dereis. So the Gemara answers that the Malozer holds, or Chizda holds, rather.
One day of Yontif, so the second day of Yontif is an Issa Dereis?
Yeah.
But the second day Yontif is only the Rabbanon.
That's why it's an Issa Dereis, it's like cooking for a weekday.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. So what's the heter? Especially true on this year, when the first day of Shavuos, when there's an Issa Dereis to cook, except for Yontif needs. It's not Yontif Sheini, it's Mamash an Issa Dereis.
Even for preparation for Shabbos.
Yes, even for preparation for Shabbos. So there's more answers. The Rav Chisda is based on a Tana, who says that Tzorchi Shabbos dasim biyontif. Why? Because of Kedusha Achas, meaning that Friday and Shabbos have one status. They have one block that's put in the art of Kedusha. It starts Thursday night, and ends Motzei Shabbos. There are differing halachos within this one block of Kedusha. Sometimes Ochol Nefesh is mutter, sometimes it's Osir. But it's one halachically, one unit. And therefore, we don't look at it as cooking from one day till the next. They form a block. And that's his explanation of how Erev Toshivan helps. Now, halacha l'maisa, principally, we pass in almost all Rishon and Paschim like Rabba, that the license of Erev Tov Shilin is because of Hallel. So the Mogen Avraham makes the following observation. If the reason that it's mutter to cook with Erev Tov Shilin is because of the fact that I could use it on to feed someone on Erev Shabbos, so it has to be Roy Lachila, it has to be able to be served on Erev Shabbos. Now, what's the smallest amount of cooking that the halacha recognizes as being acceptable? And the answer to that is what's called Michael Ben Rusoi. Now, Michael Ben Rusoi refers to a person who was a fugitive. And consequently, cooking food was a very scary activity because he had to stop and build a fire and smoke went up. So his enemies, or the government, could find out where he was and chase after him and catch him. So his practice was that he cooked the food to the least point possible that it was edible, so that he could eat and get out of there before they caught up with him. So he made history as the Michael of Ben Rusoi. I'm even wondering if Ben Rusoi was his name. I have a feeling that at times Chazal, in fact, I mean, Doras means like to tear something apart and eat it. So maybe the fact that he ate like half something half raw, half cooked, is what they call the Ben Rusoi. I mean, there's also a story in the Gemara and where it refers to as Nichsei Bar Shatya. Bar Shatya was apparently a schizophrenic, a bipolar. And at times he was normal and rational, at times he was psychotic. And he sold a piece of land, and then a dispute erupted whether he was rational or psychotic when he sold the land. So this is referred to in Shas as the case of Nichsei de Bar Shatya. And I realized recently that I have a feeling that that's not his name. His name, Chazal had consideration for him and they buried his name in history. They didn't use his name. But Vashatya, meaning the person that was afflicted by mental illness, from the term Shaita. So they refer to it as the Rechos of a Vashatya, of the one that was afflicted by mental illness. So that's not to use his name and embarrass him, but rather the case became a paradigm. The case illustrated important halachic principles. So I suspect that Michael Ben Rusoi is the same thing, that the thief has disappeared into obscurity. But the fact that he sort of tore his food apart, like Doras Ba'ochala.
But they wouldn't want to, why wouldn't they want to embarrass
well,
him?
There's no reason to preserve his infamy forever. It's not such a crime. He was a thief. You know, a thief doesn't have to, you know, you don't have to hang his picture up forever in the post of, you know, for 2,000 years we have to still, you know, we remember him. So it could be they just referred to him as Michael Ben Rusoi. Now, what Michael Ben Rusoi is a shiloh. Does it mean half cooked or a third, which is the principle? You were a third cooked. Well, in Hilchos Shabbos, the halacha is that I put up food, and I, let's say in a place where I don't have a blech, so it has to be at least half cooked when Shabbos starts. And with the Yevit, if there's no blech, it has to be one third cooked. Now, what do we do in Hilchos Erev Tov Shilin? Now, it ought to come out that we should be machmor like the view of half cooked, because here we're dealing with an Issa D'Oraisa, not an Issa D'Rabbanan. Now, what's interesting is in the Mishnah Berurah itself, he quotes a view that says one third cooked, but in the source to a Prima Gadim. The Prima Gadim is not in Siman Tov Kof Chav Zayin. The Prima Gadim is found really in Siman Reish Nun Tes. And in Siman Reish Nun Tes, the Prima Gadim himself says that it should be half cooked, which is consistent with the logical principle that should determine the halacha. The one that says a third cooked is the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. So I wrote in my sefer it should be half cooked. It's something is awry with saying that the reed that our third cook suffices. Now, so now let's go back. So according to the Mogen Avraham, the food has to be at least half cooked by the time the sun sets.
What's the test for half cooked?
It's very hard to determine that. You have to ask a cook. I mean, according to the Chazanish, the way you would determine it is not in the boiling up stage. Once it's hot and starts to cook, the amount of time it would take from that point to the end to cook, and then divide that in half.
It's time.
I don't think there's any other way to determine that.
Yeah.
What the amount of time that it takes to put a piece of meat in the oven? How
till it warms up, forget about that. Then it didn't start to cook. Minus that out. So once you get to the point that it's hot already, you know, it started to get hot.
Preheat the oven.
You know, and then the food starts to get hot too. Food has to
boil. Boiling, or even before that. When it starts boiling,
I would think so. At least when it reaches Yatzoledes, at that point. When it reaches Yatzoledes, that's really the beginning of the cooking. Mm-hmm. So from that point on, it's not relevant really by a liquid, but by a solid.
So,
you know, it would have to get hot, and then you would count it somewhere. So, consequently, it has to be half cooked by the time Shkiyas HaChama comes. Therefore, what's important is to start cooking early enough on Friday afternoon when we use an Erev Shkiyas, that all the food is going to be half cooked by the time Shkiyas HaChama comes. And that's not always so simple. The balabustas don't want to leave on extra fires. You know, particularly Pesach was very hard. Because all of a sudden at the end, I realized that we hadn't made hot water yet. And there was no way with whatever else was cooking that the hot water was going to get done before Shkia. So fortunately, I got use of my neighbor did me a favor and took my kettle and warmed it up for me. They had an open flame, so they warmed it up. They put it up on high, and they had a little gas flame, and I brought it back in 10 minutes. The kettle was cooked. But it's a problem. The balabustas don't like, especially shavuos. It's starting to get hot already, beginning of June. So one has to be careful that one starts early enough in the day. I mean, stop to consider the fact that, you know, they would make a cholim and soup and whatever else one typically makes on a Friday afternoon.
That's interesting. Let's say you have a hot pot or an urn. So, alright, you put it up, let's say, left pension time, just before you remember. So you don't know at what point it's going to boil.
Well,
you don't know if it's going to be completely boiled.
Well, it doesn't have to be, but it should reach about 160 degrees, which means it has to go significant by Shkia. Therefore, you can't wait too late to put it up. Because of that, the Mogen Avraham introduced another halacha. And that halacha is that on any Erev Tavshilin day, that we should daven early Marv. So, because the earlier we're going to daven Marv, then the earlier people are going to feel rushed to get the cooking done. They're going to shul already. They got to finish this up. They're going to light candles, up to davening. So the Mogen Avraham holds that it's, and the Chofetz Chaim cites this in Siman Tov Kuf Chof Zayin, that it's a chumrah to daven early on the Erev Tavshila day to make sure that we're pushed to finish earlier than we would normally finish the cooking. It's in Tov Kuf Chof Zayin. I think it's Sifkot Gimel. And if you want further amplification, I mean, the Rav Shulchan Aruch HaGras spells it out very, very black and white, what the Pshat and the Mogen Avraham is. So this is a very, very important halacha. And only under the circumstances that one won't have what to eat at all is the Chofetz Chaim makel to some extent to allow one to be samech on the sheet that a tzorchei Shabbos nasa b'yont, because there are one or two rishonim that actually hold that way halacha l'maisa. So contrary to popular opinion of what takes place with Erev Tavshila, that once we made the Erev Tavshila, that's it, everything's fine. It's not so fine. We first have to make sure that on Erev Shabbos that we get the cooking rolling quickly. so that by the time Shkia comes, everything's at least half cooked already. So this is very, very important. It's a halacha which is not well known at all. A very important halacha. Now, when we're dealing with the Erev Tavshilin, we have to make sure that the Erev Tavshilin still exists and is still edible until we finish the cooking. Once the cooking is finished, we don't have to worry what happens to the Erev Tavshilin. But till we finish cooking, we have to make sure that we have an Erev Tavshilin. So we have to carefully put the Erev Tavshilin away on Erev Yom Tov to make sure that it doesn't spoil and doesn't get eaten. Because if either one of those two things happens, they're on the Erev Tavshilin is dead. So there's nothing that we can do with it. So this we have to be very careful about. And that's why the Erev... Yeah, Aaron.
Well, you might be saying, you're going to say it now, but in the Nusach, it says if this covers everyone in the...
We'll get to that. We're not up to that yet.
Okay.
Now, the Erev Tavshilin consists of something baked, a baked item, and a cooked item. So typically for the baked item, we've used challah or a matzah. It has to be the type of food that could be used for a main dish. I mean, the cooked item should be the type that could be used for a main dish. And then the other part, usually they use a challah or a matzah. Now, history, there are things that are very... We don't imagine living outside the circumstances of our own culture, our own technology. And as such, I had a rude awakening one day when I realized that in the absence of electricity, so then there's no ice, except in the winter times. So I knew that then I read that certain places in northern Russia used to float ice down the rivers from the Arctic Circle, and they would sell ice in cities along the major rivers in Russia, in northern Russia. So I was curious about all of this. So I asked my father-in-law, Shlita, like what went on in his town in Poland. So we said nobody had ice in the town. The only one that wealthy people had an ice house on the ground. They used to cut blocks of ice, and they had ice, and the bar had ice because it also had an ice house. But a normal, even average, you know, Balabas, not a poor person, but an average person, for average means, did not have any ice. If you wanted a cold drink, you had to go to the bar. That was the only place, you know, they had ice, and you get a cold drink in the bar. Otherwise, you couldn't get a cold drink. And there was no refrigeration. So I suddenly realized why the halacha had such an emphasis on shechita and allowing shechita on Yom Tov. I mean, imagine in the summertime, Shavuos, you know, preparing something before Yom Tov. You know, could you imagine if you, let's say, a 3-day Yom Tov, Shabbos, Sunday, and Monday, Shavuos, what the food would look like on Monday in 95 degree weather without refrigeration? So then I understood what the Aruch HaShulchan was saying. The Aruch HaShulchan indicates that that's why the hard-boiled egg became the favorite means of making the Erev Tavshilin. Because the hard-boiled egg is very hardy. It doesn't spoil easily.
Yeah. It's for a main dish?
What?
It's for a main dish.
An egg is a main dish. Of course it is.
Not a yant?
It's a main type. It's a main dish. That's it. It's
Shabbos.
Two alive.
Shalosh Shuras,
it's a main dish. Egg is a main dish. So that's why the hard-boiled egg emerged as the typical Erev Tavshilin, because they didn't have refrigeration. Nowadays, you know, you could use fish, you could use meat. So I vary sometimes. Sometimes I use a piece of fish, and sometimes you use a hard-boiled egg. But you have to make sure if you use fish that you put it away or mark it that it doesn't get eaten until Shabbos actually comes. From this emerged another meaning that is commonly known. When is the era of Tavshilin consumed? Shalosh Shuras. Usually Shalosh Shuras. How did this come about? What's that with Shabbos? There's three suitors of Shabbos. And one Shabbos came, we're not cooking anymore. So what was the necessity of waiting for Shabbos? So this stems from another practice that we have. We have a principle that if something was once used for a mitzvah, we should endeavor to use it for other mitzvahs. And therefore we have a practice, some people have the practice, that they take the leftover lulav, and either they throw it into the matzah oven, they bake matzahs with it, or they use it to burn the chametz on Erev Pesach. For this principle. So this was the same principle which operated in terms of the Erev Tov Shiva. Since we had used this challah for the Erev Tov Shiva, so now we want to use it for another mitzvah. So what they used to do was the following. In the communities that used it for Erev Tov Shiva, what they did is, they used it as the second challah Friday night. They used it as the second challah Shabbos morning. And then finally, by challah Shudis, they used it as the first challah and they ate it. So they used it three times over for a mitzvah. That's how this came about. And therefore, we only have the remnant of that minute that we eat it by challah Shudis. But this actually came about because they were using it three different times for Lechem Mishnah to use it for three more mitzvahs before they actually consumed it.
Why don't we do the same thing?
It's not the minute. Listen, it's the minhag, it's not, if your father and your grandfather did the minhag, do it.
Oh, but also if you use matzah for it, then usually for Lechem Mishnah you use bread, not matzah.
You can use matzah. Why not use matzah too? Why not? So this is where this particular practice came from. That it's eaten at Erev Tov Shiva. Not all communities, some communities use it for the first challah Friday night or Shabbos morning, and they consumed it in that fashion. But the fact that it was for challah Shudis came about in this particular fashion. Now, Irwin mentioned the fact that in the text which is associated with the Erev Tov Shilin, there's a brocha, and then it says, Behodein Eruva, Yeshora Lona, Lameifa, Lavashola, Ulatmon, Latmunai, Ulamebat Koltzorchono, Lona, Ulachol, Yisrael, Adorim, Verazis. Now, this is a very misunderstood line. So basically it says that we're allowed to cook, bake, and do all types of other things which are necessary for Shabbos on Yom Tov, based on this Erev. And this license is lonu for us, so the Chol Adorim Be'erazos, and anyone else that lives in this city. Now, there's a process by which this works, which is also not understood. The mere fact that someone makes an Erev Tov Shilin does not suffice that anyone else can rely upon that Erev Tov Shiva. What has to happen is that everyone has to have a share in the Erev Tov Shiva. So you have to be mezaka, you have to give it to someone, really someone other than your wife, and you want to be children, etc. And they should be zoicha, they should take possession of it, take title to it, for a part of it, for everyone in the community. And anyone that lives within the tchum is included in this. So anyone that normally lives within the tchum is included in this.
Doesn't
era.
Require a special shear though. You don't have to have a shear.
No, there's no shear. We usually it's. I mean, you think we use a kazayas for the Erev altogether, but beyond that, there's no shear for everyone else.
That's
why. Now, therefore, it's particularly the responsibility of the rov to make the Erev Tov Shilin for the entire community. So therefore, I have to be especially careful both to make the Erev and to make sure I'm zaka, that I give a shira to anyone that lives within the confines of the tchum.
What about for Baal Bas?
Baal Bas's family is included. They don't need any. They don't need special zikr. The people that live in his household don't need special zikr.
Yeah, well, you now, take possession of.
They take it in the hand and lift it up.
Usually, someone holds it and someone makes the bracha.
Well, usually what happens, I have them make, what I do is I have them make the kinyan, take possession, and they give it back to me, and then I make the bracha. Now, that one has to do before one makes the declaration, the Erev declaration, before you should really do it right before you make the bracha. Or, they're giving everyone a chalik in this, you know, you're sending it, a, yes.
Is there any issue if you're going to visit someone? Stay with someone, is there any issues in terms of?
If you're going to visit someone, there are two svaras. There are some that say that you should be explicitly included in the Erev Tov Shilin, you should ask them to be included, and others say you don't have to, because since you're taking all your meals together with them for Yom Tov, you're considered part of their household. And the common practice is to keep them with the latter view. So this is a little bit, is the Erev Tov Shilin story. Now we'll add a little bit more to this. Which is the following. What, besides Ochel Nefesh, besides food preparation, can I use the Erev Tov Shilin to anything else? For example, let's say the Gabbai comes on the first day of Shavuos, and he wants to roll the Sefer Torah to the lady for the second day. The first day we're reading Parshas Yisro, the second day we're going to read in Parshas Re'eh, Kol HaBachor. This year it's, we're going to read Asa to Asa because of Shabbos. So he wants to roll the Sefer Torah or Shabbos after davening. Yes, Friday after davening, he wants to roll it from Yisro to Parshas Re'eh. Is he allowed to do so? I daven in one shul Friday, and in Shabbos I'm going to daven in a different shul. Can I carry the talis on Yom Tov? So, if there's an error, we wouldn't have a problem with that in and of itself. But the Shaila is, so does it help for other things that are necessary for Shabbos? Most of them, in fact, don't include most of the things that we might even do. The talis case is a case which involves malacha too. The case of rolling the Sefer Torah doesn't include malacha. We see in the Achrayim that for things which are not ochel nefesh, which are not food, that it's permissible that one can rely upon the Erev Tov Shilin to be able to prepare them on Friday for Shabbos. I can roll the Sefer Torah on Friday afternoon for Shabbos. But carrying a talus is typically wouldn't be a derisa anyhow, because a hoyo could use it today. It's possible to use it today. So, most achrona, there's a Rabbi Kiva Eger that seems to say otherwise, but there are these whole slew of achrona who allow the Erev Tov Shilin to be used to roll the Sefer Torah and other such things. When I asked Rabbi Yoshua about it, he gave me a very interesting comment. The commenter was really based on Rishalmi and Beyer, in the Sugya of Erev Tov Shilin. And what he said is the following. He says, "Others help them, but Medafas Nishtovet." Meaning to say that either the Erev Tov Shilin helps, or maybe you don't even need it altogether. There's a question that perhaps, that's what seemed to be the Mashmos in the Rishalmi, that for non-ochel nefesh purposes, especially things which didn't include, let's say things which didn't include malach, for non-ochel nefesh, just hachon, let's go back. I don't mean, let's leave out the talis case. I don't want to get involved in the talis case now. Talis case we could still pilpul about. I want to leave that to the side. Carrying the talis on Friday and Shabbos. But those things which didn't include malach, so... So either you don't need the Erev Tov Shilin altogether, never mandated, obligated the need for the Erev Tov Shilin, or Erev Tov Shilin helps for it. Yerushalmi is mashma, you don't even need it. So it's a shadda, it's a kasha, and Achorim say you do need it, and so the whole Torah, it's a yishavad of Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is in a certain sheet in Tanoim. Of Tzorcha Shabbos Nasim beyond him, because the whole story. But that's what he meant, that either other is the help, or the Badaf is the But that's...
Why wouldn't you eat it? Okay.
Because they didn't make, for purposes of Shabbos, they didn't institute the dinner of Erev Tov Shilin. The same way they allowed you to prepare even for Shabbos. So the Gabbai, that's only the Gabbai that didn't Melocha they made that. But the Gabbai that didn't Hachonah, which is the Rabbanah, they never instituted Erev Tov Shilin altogether.
You see, there's only a problem of Hachonah to do on Yanti for a weekday, not for Shabbos.
That's what we're saying. If it's Erev Shabbos to Shabbos, the same way... Ultimately, we're preparing on Erev Shabbos for Shabbos. So that they perhaps did not ban in the first place to demand an Erev Tov Shilin except by Ochel Nefesh things. know, those things which include malacha, but things which don't include malacha, they may never have made that restriction in the first place. So this is just a little bit of the background of what the Erev Tavshilin does for us. I mean, there's a whole siman in the Shulchan Aruch which is worth learning about what, how the Erev Tavshilin helps, how, you know, what it helps for, and how it has to be made, and what it has to be made of. Now, Erwin mentioned the fact of relying on someone else's Erev Tavshilin. Now, that is not a din l'chadchila. That the chadchila, every person is supposed to make the oil Erev Tavshilin the way we pass it. And if a person forgot to do so, he may very infrequently rely on someone else's. Some say only once in his whole lifetime is allowed to rely on someone else's. Whatever, it's hard exactly to gauge what the parameters of that halacha are. Now, the exception to all of this is that if I inform you beforehand that I'm including you in my Erev Tavshilin, then you don't have to make your own, and then it's the Chatchila to be Samech in my Erev Tavshilin. Then it wouldn't be a problem, because I'm making the Erev Tavshilin with Das, with your Das, for both of us.
You have to do the Zikr thing?
How do you have to do the Zikr?
I'm a guest in your house. Can you tell me to make the Erev Tavshilin? In other words, I have a guest and I'm busy. Can I tell us?
You could be a shliach. I don't see any reason that you can't be the shliach. I don't see a reason that you couldn't be the shliach.
So someone tells you that they're busy with some tzarach on Erev Yontif, and they're not going to have time to
so
make
the
shliach.
So they want you to take their food. They want you to take their food.
And then you're in their house.
In their own house and make an Erev Tavshilin.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
That's my question. I'm in your house and I'm busy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, do me a favor and make the Erev.
Yeah, yeah. I often made, it's not exactly the same case that you're asking, but I often made the Erev Tavshilin Erev Yontif for my father, Allah Shalom. You know, he was busy, whatever, because he was working, whatever it was, until, you know, he wanted to be forgotten, he'd ask me, I would have made it for him. Many times.
What if they don't ask? Can you just do it on your own? Let's say you know there's a... Let's say you know there's somebody who doesn't know the halachas too well, who's a neighbor, and they're not going to do Erev Tavshilin.
So,
can you do it for them then?
Well, when you're making yours, we mezakeh them too, that's all.
Even though they didn't ask you, they don't know.
Yeah, listen to
Do you have to tell them to that you're doing it? Or
it's lechatchila better if you do tell them, then lechatchila that can be said in chalit.
As opposed to
the
making
it
better.
Now, should general people say that line for Kol HaDorim is also, or they should be leaving it to the Rav only?
No, there's no problem if they say it also. But if they don't do the Zikr, this really has no value.
No, but I always do a Zikr. I always have one of my...
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be necessarily a male whole taking it.
No.
As long as it's over Bat Bar Bat Mitzvah.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a little bit, we've explored a little bit there of Tavshilin's story. It's a fascinating limud of its own right. It will end with perhaps where I should have begun, but at least we'll end with that. That if the Issa D'Raisa was removed by either Hoyo, focus of Tzorchi Shabbos Nasim B'Yontim, so why did they institute the dinner of Tavshilin altogether? So in the Gemara and Beya we find two reasons, and there's a whole Shail and Rishonim if these reasons line up with the other two reasons of Hoyel and Tzorchi Shabbos Nasim B'Yontif, or are independent of that. It's a huge commotion of the Rishonim about this. But the two reasons that we find Rabban of Ashi in the second parak in Beya, which talks about Erev Tavshilin, they give two different reasons for why Erev Tavshilin was instituted. One reason is that we should draw the following conclusion. If I can't even cook for Shabbos without a special license, then Halach is kama v'kama, and certainly I shouldn't be allowed to cook for Chol. So therefore, this will help to remind me that even though I can cook for Shabbos, but I certainly can't. To remind me not to cook l'chol. So even though when they gave me license to cook from one day to the next, I needed a special heter. So I realized that this is not giving me license to cook me yontif l'chol. It's giving me yontif from Friday to Shabbos on yontif. I can't cook without a special license. I certainly can't think that I can cook from Friday for Sunday. That is certainly fits in with the Mandi Omar of Tzorchi Shabbos Nasa B'Yontif, and I cook for Sunday to Misa D'Raisa. Is this also going to go in the other Mandi Omar or not? That's where the fun of the Rishonim begins. The Ramban, the Mohammas. The Rova said, the Gemara is a different Cheshbon. And that is that Chazal were concerned that we would not be adequately mindful to prepare Suda Shabbos. So we make a simple cheshbon, which that is, listen, we'll cook the yontif, and as the yontif in general tends to be more lavish, I'll be halacha the Sudas. That's what we'll make. Whatever's left over, we'll leave for Shabbos. Not going to be such bad leftovers. We'll roast beef, we'll kugel, you know. Sure, some blintzes, you know, a little cheesecake, nothing too bad. So that'll be left for Shabbos. So they felt that this was inappropriate, that Shabbos should just be left with the leftovers, that something should be prepared, we should prepare for Shabbos too, in an appropriate fashion. So therefore, they forced upon us on Erev Yom Tov to take into consideration the Suda Shabbos by making the Erev Tovshim. That is what certainly fit in with the man, the Yom HaRoz. He's not concerned with Malacha, so what was his problem having the Erev Tovshim altogether? And some line up the Gemara in that way. That the two answers in Be'ah correspond with the two approaches to the Erev Tovshim found in the Gemara Pesachim. But there were those that insist that both tablets work according to the Mani Yom HaHoyim.
So it comes out major. So it comes out the Rabban didn't institute the Erev Tavshilin to allow you to cook for Shabbos. That the Hol does. Let's according to that answer. The Hol does. The Erev Tavshilin is the other way. They said if you don't do it, the Erev Tavshilin, since they don't want you to have leftovers, so then you can't do it.
100%.
So it was a Chum. It's not a.
It's a Chumrin Shabbos. It's not a Chumrin Yom Tov. Yes, 100%. The first one, Mahalach says, it's a Din Shmiras Yom Tov. And the second is a Din Shmiras Shabbos. So it's rather fascinating how it's the Gemara says ki toivim dedecha miyonin that chaviv and divrei sefer sometimes from the deraisa of the kedinim. And here's an example. You see, this is a din derabbanan, and yet there's so much lomdus that's involved in this din derabbanan. Chazal lived in total antithesis, their lives were total, their shitas were totally antithetical to superficiality. There's nothing about them that was superficial. And even a din derabbanan that they made, there's tremendous oimek, tremendous depth. That Pethuchas Chanuk was totally mid derabbanan. Not a shred of anything to do with the raisa with it. And yet there's as much lomdus in those few black mesechta Shabbos as in the sugi and shas. That's the nature of an old golem. That when he drinks the cup of water, it's not superficial. And he sees the cup of water and the cup and everything around it at a totally different depth. I went once to visit Adam Golem, who was dying. Navarin Kreiser, as if it's out of the rubber. He knew Menachem. The greatest of the miracle leader of the water. It was Yedidah Meshver throughout his life. One year, it's 10 years or so back already, he was in, I think, in Mount Sinai Hospital. He was dying of liver cancer. But he had tremendous tranquility. He was there about a month or so, tremendous tranquility. So I went to visit him. And we spoke about many things, but everything that he said, there was no remark that he made that was superficial. The same depth that he had in learning, that every single thing that he touched, and really the alma, life, there was nothing superficial about his remarks. Every single thing that he touched was with depth. I was just I thought about it after I left him. It's the last time that I saw him. So it's an Odom Godel. Looks beyond, always beyond the superficial. We started to talk last week, with a few minutes left, about the halachos of Boyer. So I wanted to follow up a little bit of that which we discussed last week. Principally, the halachos of Boyer work in this fashion, that if I'm going to be Boyer B'yad with my hand, I may do so on Yom Tov, even if that's the typical fashion with which to do Boyer. It's the way, it's a Shailan Achroinim, that's the way you paskan halacha l'maisa. Even if it's the typical derech to be Boyer B'yad, I'm still allowed to be Boyer B'yad. That's number one. Number two, the restrictions on Boyer apply to the types of things which tend to be done for multi-days, not just for one day at a time. So any types of utensils which are normally used for multi-day use cannot be used on Yom Tov, even if I use them just for small amounts to prepare for Yom Tov. So if I had, for example, in a factory, commercial sieves, which prepare tremendous amounts of flour in one day, much more than anyone will ever use in a day, so I couldn't even use it to sift one cup of flour to bake with on Yom Tov itself. On the other hand, the types of instruments which are typically used for same-day boyer, even though on Shabbos there would be osim and atorah, on Yom Tov the mutar go heter gomer. And consequently, for example, let's say like pasta. Shavuos, the day Mestavra, most people, the first day Shavuos, they're going to have a milach gemil, Mestavra. So suppose you decide you want to make fresh pasta. You have to get rid of the water. So not only is it permissible to take the pot cover and hold the noodles in them, dump the water out through a crack in that, but the pot cover is not really a utensil which was made for the purpose of burr. But even if I wanted to use the regular spaghetti seed strainer, I'm also allowed to do so. Why? Because typically the strainer that we use in our house, we make for today's meal. That's what we make spaghetti for. We don't make spaghetti for a week at a time. We make spaghetti for today, for immediate use. So mameila, it's mutter to use this sieve, even on Yom Tov. Now because of that, this principle, that if it's used for immediate use, you can use even things which are designed to filter or to strain on Yom Tov. If you like fresh brewed coffee, so you're allowed to use a coffee filter on Yom Tov. There may be another heter which is Nogay and Shabbos, which I don't want to get into, but for Yom Tov it's very, very straightforward. Now peelers, which on Shabbos is a whole controversy about if you're allowed to use them or not. The world doesn't use peelers, why? Because the Sochach of Rebbe, the Egle Tal, is the only sefer that I'm aware of, classical sefer, where he discussed peelers, and he held that peelers are usur. So that became the mekubal among all the Murei Haro in the world, that the peeler you're not allowed to use in Shabbos. It's considered a kli which is used for burr. I subsequently discovered that now Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach also happens to agree with that psak. Rav Moshe Feinstein, on the other hand, he never published it, but he did find out that Rav Moshe Feinstein held it as mutter to use. That a very interesting so. Consequently, on Shabbos, there's controversy about this, but on Yom Tov, since peelers are used for immediate use, it's mutter to do so. That a very funny story that happened with this. There's a woman that called me, and her father was a goyin ader. A goyin ader, off the charts. But most of his life he was a private person. He did not hold in a public position for most of his life. But he was a super goyin. And I used to talk to him frequently. We'd call each other and speak on the phone, discuss Biri Chaylis and Bumafalpul and them. And I miss him greatly. His goyinness was awesome. So he had his daughter. And she calls me up one day. You know, she tends to call me if she has shailas. She knows that her father and I used to discuss, you know, shailas. So, okay. So she, if she has a shailas in her, she calls me up. So she calls me up one day and she asks me if a peeler is mukza on Shabbos or not. So I said, I have to ask you a question before I answer you. So they tell me, what did your father hold? Did your father hold you're allowed to use peelers or not? He was a goyin, and he was a goyin in halacha too. It was a tremendous place. A tremendous place. So what did he hold? With a very original and deep mind. So she said that her father, Zecher Tzadik L'Vrocha, held that it's mutter. But after he heard that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach said that it's also, so he backed off. He was mavakim, as great as he was, but he was machniah himself. That Rav Shlomo Zalman was from Yigdoy Le'Ador, so he was makabel the psak of Rav Shlomo Zalman, he didn't do it anymore. So I said, so now that you told me that, he says, now I'll answer. I said, your father only changed his, he stopped doing it because he heard that Rav Shlomo Zalman was against it. But if your father had known that Rav Moshe agreed with him, there's no way in the world he ever would have backed off. So I said, Mameila, I said, for you, it's not muktzah. Your father held that it wasn't muktzah. And if he knew that Rav Moshe held that way, he would have stuck to his guns. Because he was a person who tended to stick to his guns. He was very, you know, he had tremendous covet for Gdolim. Other than that, he couldn't, he was a rock. I mean, he was a tremendous guy, an awesome guy. So I said, for you, it's muktzah. It's not muktzah on Shabbos. That's why I asked you what your father held. So peel is the on yontif, one's allowed to use them. Slotted spoons, it's also whole stories when one's allowed to use, not allowed to use on Shabbos. All types of terrorists, which cases are mutter, which cases are osser. How they're mutter, how they're osser. On yontif, slotted spoons are mutter. So yontif in general, because that's in general, we follow the Pesach of the Bavli Mishnah, that boirer is considered mimalech tochel nefesh, and therefore it's permissible to do so. When it comes out, it really is a machlekes of 2 days from Yerushalmi if it's mutter. That's what comes out according to the Rajba. But lahalacha lemaisa, the Magid Mishnah pasken, that's the ikra lahalacha, that burr is from aleches ochel nefesh, and just as cooking is mutter, so too is burr, but with certain restrictions. Good night, Rabbis.
What's the problem with peelers, mutter? Why should it be mutter?
The problem is, it's